like it. Now I gotta see a situated. All the reset starting over. But will it work in the browser order? How about a luck with a four leaf clover?
Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Leet on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org.
Welcome to the Modern Web Podcast.
Woo! Welcome.
It's Morphin time.
Mighty Morphin, right? I don't have gloves though, so I feel, you know, I think the color's good, but.
Color looks good on you.
Yeah. Just trying to think of something to say about the man hands coming out of the pink ranger costume, but.
Like this booming voice. It does have a skirt too, so. Hey, you. Stop that.
All right, so here we are at React Rally, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Is your helmet pretty warm inside?
Yeah, it's coming off.
We'll reveal our mystery guests here. There's Jay.
Reveal.
Jay Phelps. And Steven Rivas, Jr.
Hello.
And Michael Jackson.
Hello.
So what should we talk about then?
Probably React, probably.
Generically.
Okay.
A little bit of Ember.
Actually, I did Ember.
You guys did Ember?
I did Ember.
I did
back
not do
day.
Ember.
Yeah, I did Ember. There, lots of Ember.
There was a time where there was like only Backbone, and then Knockout kind of explored that, and then it was Angular or Ember, and I was always like, not Angular, definitely Ember. I think long term that's going to be great, and I never actually learned it, so.
You just went straight to React?
Backbone 2010 forever, and then I went to React.
Man.
We did it.
That's quite a leap.
It was
that's
interesting.
Cool. That's actually really, I think you went to the best one. That was awesome.
Just like waited just, until something better.
Yeah,
just
no,
never
that's.
Never upgrade until
that's very,
you actually need to.
It's very fortuitous timing, I think, on your part.
It worked out pretty nice, but I feel like at the same time, you know, I see a lot of the apps that Tracy here makes and all the stuff.
What does Tracy use? Tracy, what do you do?
She does like everything.
Ember and Angular too. Yeah. Not React yet. In 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we were gonna maybe try to do
React Rally.
Yeah.
Create React app. I need to show her that
because
it's like a really easy way to just be like,
sick.
Hey, let's put some code in the browser and.
Yeah.
Totally.
Thanks, Dan. Abramov, by the way, if you're watching this, because you watch all the podcasts that I'm in.
He told me.
Does he like burritos?
I think he probably
too.
Even follows you on Twitter.
It not quite. It's like I'm this close to James, Kyle, and
put
Dan
in a good
maybe
word
following
for you.
Me or something.
I could probably arrange James to follow you.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
With I
the,
cornered
the
him.
The outfit helping with
he'll
that.
See, yeah.
He'll be like, there you go.
All right.
So yeah, no Ember for me. Just kind of straight to React. But I feel like I missed out on a bunch of good stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I would say that Ember taught me a lot. Like, I wouldn't say I bring Ember's patterns to React, because that's not probably the wisest thing to do, but the extreme, like, the convention, it's very convention-based, as you probably, you know, and Michael can attest to. And seeing what that can give you once you, like, if you build your own conventions within React and seeing that you can save a bunch of time by having consistent patterns throughout your app. So, like, the biggest takeaway for me on that would just be that, obviously, if you're consistent with some sort of pattern, it's a lot more, it's a lot easier to reason about, like, because we have multiple teams that work on the apps that I maintain, and, you know, they can write something and then I can jump into it and, for the most part, know what they're doing and the patterns that they're using.
Gotcha.
Michael?
I don't actually work on apps, real apps, these days.
Lucky.
I feel kind of like I'm a cop-out. I just work on training material, and it's like, you know, Steven's been to our training, it's like tabs and content toggle, right?
Yeah, it's pretty
It's just those two. It's just those all two. The time.
Well, you guys had the like sound one that Ryan.
Yeah, the what do we call it? The theremin. Yeah.
Is that what? It's just like hovered over it.
I mean, the theremin. That's that like you're moving your hand yep. and it detects.
Yep. I mean, but who knows if any of it's right? Because I don't even build real apps anymore. I could be just like talking about like anything.
I go. And so we actually did their training course twice. One in SF and then took our team back down to Carlsbad. Mm-hmm. And I feel like every time I sit there, I'm like, these guys get it. This is the best pattern. This is just so amazing. And I go back and I get these like hugely complex apps thrown at me. And I'm like, did I learn anything at the talk? Or do I just like not know
See,
how to...
That is so...
The things that I do really well though are the toggles though.
I am officially a talking head. That's what I am. I just talk. I've always worried about that though. I am.
I can relate because I've felt that way many times, like watching a tutorial or going and seeing a talk. Or I've never done any like formal trainings before, but I imagine I would. That like I get out of it and I'm like I feel so good and feel like I know exactly how to do it. And then I go to start implementing it in an actual app and I'm like, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing.
Like, maybe we should just do like a month long training. Where we're gonna
that'd be great.
Build.
Do you think we could take a month off?
Twitter.com.
Well, I think
just do it.
Yeah. One of the problems I find is that like is a lot of the examples because
they're so contrived. Right?
That's the word. But yeah. It's a tough choice because if you don't make them contrived, like in the real world, building apps, there's gonna be really complicated, non-trivial state management and side effect stuff.
Totally.
And it's going to be confusing to understand regardless of how well you write it.
Totally.
And so there's a reluctancy when you're doing trainings and particularly a reluctancy when you're doing talks because it's so short to show those as examples because you know no one's going to understand what the heck is going on.
Well, even when you're like writing a book or something, like when's the last time you picked up like a technical book and you were like, oh, wow, this is a deep dive, right? Yeah. Like it's always just kind of like about, you know, surface level deep.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because what are you going to do? I remember one time, actually, I did get a book that did some deep dives, and the code listing is, like, 5 pages. You know? So you can't, like, look through all, like, you know, you don't read that, you know? Maybe on your computer monitor, obviously, but, yeah, it's hard, you know, to, like, really get, like, real world stuff. I mean, we try.
Reveal that my pants don't really fit here.
No, so, dude, it's
on the training
shoes
side of things.
Fit in really well. Black. It's good.
Well, these are mine.
It's like you were prepped for it. Those are your pants.
No, these pants I think fit.
Those are what are they called? Capris. Those are like 3/4 length.
They look good. I think you need some boots like mine.
I do. You know the muscles and the boots and the gloves.
Yeah. I've got a complete set. He got chapped.
So I like challenged him to an arm wrestle on Twitter.
You have like Power Ranger costume envy.
Yeah, I kind of do.
You kind of
shouldered
pink, muscle-less.
Well, it's only muscle-less, and that because I'm an engineer. You know, like if I was a personal trainer doing a React podcast, I could probably fill this out a little better.
Totally. Sorry, Jay, I cut you off.
You're fine. Since I actually haven't ever attended your trainings, do you guys go through like real world, like I know you don't go super deep, but do you go through application examples or do you teach like APIs?
Yes, no, absolutely not. I abhor like, let's talk about the API. I think that, I mean, sometimes you do have to talk about some API. Here's a method, here's its signature, here's what it does. But, so we actually do have quite a few examples where it's like, you know, like we'll build a full blown app. Of course, we will do all of the CSS for you, because that's the really hard part.
Yeah.
We have this chat app that we build, for example, in one of our trainings, and we give you all the HTML and the CSS, and then it's just like, okay, let's bring it to life. Let's put some D in that HTML, you know? So then you just like hook it up and start like getting some event handlers and like, you know, some things and some state. Okay, where are we gonna put that and how, you know? And it works. We're chatting with each other by the end of 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like people who've never even touched React before, like getting going. So like, That's a real app. I mean, we have
you guys have login.
So.
You guys have a lot of, you know, like that GitHub
the
API
search thing.
Which, like, it fetches results from GitHub and then displays them. You scroll to the bottom, and
it's like an infinite scrolling.
Infinite scrollers are, I still use those every day on almost every page that I can. Just because, if we have on some of our apps, it's like, hey, here's like 10,000 rows, you know.
I've got like this perf example that I pulled out of one of the apps that I built, which is like it's like basically a grid of images, but you don't want to show them all if you've got like 5,000 images. You don't want to load all those into the page. You want to like just show the ones as it scrolls. You just want to load, you know. So it really is stuff that we've like worked on before, but like, you know, simplified for a training environment, so you don't have. Honestly, the biggest, you know, what's crazy is every single time we do that thing, the biggest thing that people want to talk about is Webpack.
Really?
Oh yeah. I think it happened at Netflix. We did it at Netflix.
Really?
Didn't we? The first time we were at Netflix.
Actually, I didn't make it to the trainings at Netflix.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
The...
But yeah, the Webpack is like huge, right? It's like the other half of the puzzle. It's like, how do I write code? Okay, now how do I like deploy it? Mm-hmm. You know? How do I make an app?
Have you played with Webpack 2 yet?
I've not. Have you?
Played, but not shipping anything yet.
It's supposed to be like, so what I understand is ES6 modules, right? And so that means we can do some tree shaking.
Yeah.
But no, the other one I've been looking at is Rollup.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, the other day I was online and I was like, what is this Rollup thing? Like, I want to play with it. You know, I just want to use it on something. So I have this library that's not really related to any of my React stuff. It's called Expect, and you make assertions with it. And so it's pretty simple. So I was like, you know, I create a UMD module right now, just a UMD bundle, global bundle, with Webpack. And so I was like, maybe I'll use Rollup for that. But I didn't really have time to dig into it. Anyway, Rich Harris, the guy who wrote Rollup, he's like, I saw your tweet. And he submitted a PR. And it was amazing, like the change. So, you know, obviously Expect, it's not an app. It's more just like a little utility library. But the bundle was half the size. It booted in half the time. Like it was, yeah, it was really important.
Was the guy that created Rollup?
Yeah, the guy that created Rollup.
He PR'd your library.
Yeah.
Hey, you're doing that wrong.
Yeah, he was just like, here's how it would be if you used Rollup instead of Webpack.
Gotcha.
And I was just like, I was really impressed. Like, I think Rollup actually makes some pretty good trade-offs. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have like the broader scope of like, let me build your whole app.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely is, I mean, it does some. So the boot time was cut in half because he doesn't have, if you've ever looked at like the bundled output of like a Webpack, it's like a ton of functions. And he's just got like one function. I don't even fully understand exactly how that works, because he takes all the sources of all the different modules and puts them into one immediately invoked function body.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, I don't know how that works either, but Webpack 2.
Because
you
think
Webpack
the things
2,
would collide,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Webpack 2 apparently does a similar thing, I'm told, but I haven't inspected
Yeah, what I want to do is like get two modules and like name everything the same.
Well, I'm sure
and, like,
it does hygiene,
it renames
the variables, you know, so they don't clash. But
yeah,
you know, then you have to worry about stock traces. I mean, not worry about them, but I mean, like,
well, you gotta think about that kind of stuff.
It's like, you know, if your function's now called something 1, 2, 3, you know, it's like that's...
So you'd have source maps though, and that would give you
you're right.
Source back to your stuff. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. Cool stuff.
I always forget about source maps because I have them disabled because of performance. For whatever reason, DevTools has been fairly slow fairly recently and I tracked it down to source maps. And I'm not blaming them. It's a large app.
Yeah.
And, you know, several megs of JavaScript
source
that
maps,
I work on. So, and there's a lot of source maps.
Yeah.
So I've had it disabled for months and I just forgot the source maps for a thing.
I think source maps are at least like... Aren't they at least like half the size or a quarter of the size of the original source?
They're pretty substantial. The app that I'm working on right now, we actually might have to take some of that stuff out because we have to build the bundles separately now. The slave that we use on Jenkins to do our browserify build runs into a range error on the call stack. It's just like, can't build your app. It's too much. And I mean, the output isn't really that large. It's not like gigs of JavaScript or anything, but it just hangs when it's trying to do too many of the individual bundles at once.
Now, maybe this is a naive question, but could a person use something like Rollup for like production builds? Like, use something like Webpack for your like normal development process for all the development awesomeness, but then use Rollup and feed the output of Rollup into Webpack for production. Obviously, that you wouldn't want to, if that was even probable, you wouldn't want to do that in normal development because it would slow things down. But
yeah.
To get the, I guess yeah, it, really so kinda it probably negates it with the Webpack too, as long as the tree shaking works just as good as Rollup.
I would imagine that Webpack 2 is probably pretty similar to what Rollup does, at least with JavaScript modules, you know. And then of course Webpack can do, you know,
the loader
the loader stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah, but I did see recently, I went to one of the modern web meetups and learned about that Webpack 2 has this way better code splitting now. It uses system.js for the code splitting. So you do like, you know how you do require assure? Or
dot ensure?
Yeah. Instead of doing that, you just use system import and it knows from that. And so that like basically your code is like you could run it without, run it without the compiler.
In theory,
you know, but...
I wonder how they do their... Oh, they probably do the system module loader spec, which is... That's like a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes you just gotta, like, ship something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's kind of where...
Sure, that's why we haven't even touched
that,
because I'm like...
Exactly.
It's like, I'll wait for...
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I'll take some, you know, I'll be a trailblazer on a certain amount of things.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't want to make my entire app trailblazer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm just waiting for that stuff to settle down.
Exactly.
Waiting for Webpack 2 to ship.
Exactly.
All the, you know...
Let me know when it ships.
So... I saw a tweet, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before, about, and this is to Michael, about the History.js stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk, like, is that, like, not, I couldn't tell from the tweet whether that's something that's kind of secretive or you're...
No. So I'm not somebody who, so I write a lot of open source code. And in my experience, it's always better to just, like, get it out there as soon as you can. Like, talk about it, get people involved, you know, get eyes on it, get people using it as soon as you can. And you know, so some people are kind of the opposite. They like to make it like more of like a Steve Jobs style announcement, you know, like hide it from the world, and then all of a sudden, voila, like, and the curtain comes off and it's like perfect, you know. And I find that whenever I try and do that, I always like wait too long, and then and so I just like to get out there. So what I shipped the other day was just a very, very early version of this library called React History. So I wrote this history library a year and a half ago, something like that. It was basically, we were working on React Router. There was this piece of it that I thought, hey, you know, everybody's going to have to do this history management stuff. Even the Angular and the Ember and the, you know, the Cycle people, like everybody... People using Redux, they're all going to have to like interface with the browser history stack. Mm-hmm. It's like, why don't I just extract this piece here and I'll call it history, and then this will be like, it's kind of this core library that we can all sort of use. And so we used that in React Router 2 and 3. The 3 actually, it's still in a beta, but anyway. My hope was that it would kind of become this kind of common layer that a lot of different people would adopt and get a lot of different eyes on it. And it's done pretty well as an open source library. But at the same time, I go back and I look at it now and I think, like, I'm doing things like I'm managing a lot of different state in there, in this history library. And since it's just me and JavaScript, like, I've got to figure out how to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have things like the React component lifecycle or some other kind of, like, you know, here's setup, here's teardown, here's you're going to get new props or whatever. You know, I don't have any of that. And maybe I've just been so spoiled by, like, the React lifecycle, but if I don't get to write code in that paradigm, I'm just like, I always end up reinventing, like, half of that paradigm, right?
Sure.
I always end up reinventing, you know, object initialization, teardown, you know, and so I was at this point where I was just like, you know what? What if I wrote the whole thing as React components? Like, what if it was just React components? Because everybody knows how to build a React component, right? And they know how to use them, and they know how to render them and stuff. And this is kind of actually some of the mistakes that we made with the early routers, we had these components that weren't actually real, like the route components, that you couldn't render them.
Yeah.
They were just like for configuration.
DSL, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, it kind of threw people a little bit. And so with this next release of, with this release of React History and then React Router, the idea is everything's a component. It's all just React components. So you know how to render React components, you know how to deal with them. You don't have to, you know, you do any sort of static thing up front that you know, you might have to adjust later and like figure out your own kind of life cycle. It's all just components. And so it's actually been a lot of fun. I've actually like using this React History library. I've actually like, I don't know, you know, when you have a little bit of like help from under you from the React framework, then that kind of frees up your mind to think of like higher level concerns. You know, things of like, what should the responsibility of this class actually be? You know, it something small, something really, really small that came out of this refactoring, for example. Right now, the history library is responsible for query string serialization, which means that it is the only piece of the current React router that knows how to create hrefs, right? Which means, I mean, it's kind of a trail here, that links that are rendered on the server need an instance of history in order to create an href. And so for the past year, I've been telling people, look, don't use history on the server. Oh, but I need history to create an href. I know, it's a bad abstraction, right? Because history doesn't really belong in a stateless environment that is an HTTP server. Like, you just make a request, you generate the HTML, you're done, right? There's no time going on there. So there shouldn't actually be a whole lot of state outside of like, here's the session state, right? Here's the current user or whatever. And so it was a good abstraction, mostly, but then it had like these little pieces on it that I was like always really annoyed by and always really frustrated with. And so what we did was when we started looking into React Router 4, we were like, okay, what does this look like? And our initial prototype, we just were like using the history library. And we're just like, okay, we'll get a history and we'll pass it into your router and like, and then I was like, you know what, that sucks, because on the server you're still gonna need this history object, which doesn't belong on the server. Like, what if we rethought that piece? What would that actually look like? And so the work that emerged from that was the React History Library, which, as I said, is just components. And turns out you don't actually use those things at all on the server. You don't render them at all. You only render those in a stateful client-side environment. And then on the server, you use like a lower level API, which is a static router. And so we finally actually have a really good integration point with libraries like Express and other like Node HTTP servers, right? They have these hooks like on push, on replace. What happens when you push? Well, if I'm on the server, I'm probably just going to res.redirect somewhere else. If I'm on the client, well, then I'll, you know, push a new href into the address bar, stuff like that. So I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, the React history and the React router work that we're doing right now is just hitting on the right abstraction. And when you do, a lot of code melts away, a lot of things become a lot clearer. You kind of look at the code and go, huh, like that's obvious, right? Like, it probably should have just always been like that.
Now, how does that integrate with something like Redux? Like, there's existing implementations for you know, syncing the state with that, or being able to manipulate. Like, the app that one of the apps I work on does not a lot, but some URL or transitions, I guess you could say, router transitions inside Redux middleware. Mm-hmm. So, like, is there still an imperative API that I could wrap around that so that I can dispatch actions?
For sure, yeah. So the idea was that these history components from the React History API. You know how like text inputs work? They can like be controlled, and you can give them a value, and then give them an on change. And then when on the on change, you can decide, okay, what's the new value? And then if it's changed, I'll like give you a new value, right? So it's kind of this controlled API. We're using that exact same idea in these history objects.
Oh, so they can be controlled or uncontrolled.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, so you can actually maintain the state of the history
somewhere else if you wanted. Yeah.
Nice. So you don't have to do syncing.
Exactly.
You can just literally have it. And it's
exactly.
Just, it's
so you've got an on change, awesome. And then you've got a location prop that you can just use to like control this thing so you could keep the state in your Redux store if you want to. Mm. Again, though, it's about hitting on the right abstraction, right? Like, once you hit on it, then it's like, oh, okay, why don't we just make these things like text inputs, you know?
Yeah, example of the declarative components, like the of the lifecycle hook stuff, or the, excuse me, like transitioning stuff.
Yeah, people didn't like those very much.
And I
some people freaked out.
Yeah, right. It's very novel, and so it's very, I knew it would be controversial, because
yeah,
I thought of the same thing,
yeah,
and every single person I've ever shown that type of thing, and I've talked to like the Grim React core team about similar things, about like, hey, is there any way we could, in like a functional component, we could have lifecycle hooks of some sort, you know, maybe declaratively, or like declarative AJAX calls and things like that. And unanimously, almost everyone is always just so weirded out by it. Like,
yeah.
It's just,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, I don't know. I just feel like I need an imperative API for that.
So we actually give you both. We give you this history object, kind of like the history objects that you're used to now. They've got go, push, replace, that kind of thing. You've got your imperative API. And then on top of that, we thought, you know, I was writing that declarative API actually came out of, I was writing some unit tests, and I was like, how could I make these unit tests like really easy to follow and read? And all they do is they're just these tiny little wrappers. They use component did mount and component did update, which is where you're supposed to do imperative stuff anyway, like go and do imperative stuff on the DOM. And then they pull the history off of context and then call a method on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really, I mean, the implementation is very, very small of all of those components. And so it really is just an experiment. In our trainings, we talk a lot about how you should be able to just read your render methods and know exactly what's going on. Like, the words inside your render method should indicate to you, you know, something like, for example, like React Motion. If I throw a motion component into my render, now I know, hey, there's some animating going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, throw a class name on it, or like just a click handler that's gonna like do something imperatively in one of the other lifecycles. Like, it's great to see that motion component in there, right? Mm-hmm. And similarly, it's great, at least it feels to me pretty good to see these action components in there, to see like a push or a replace, or in the router you've got redirect components in the next version of the router. So you can just stick a redirect, you know, if they did something, okay, render a redirect, and then that'll go redirect you off somewhere else. So we have the imperative API, and I think our position right now is we'll always give you the imperative API. If you want to tuck that away in one of the other lifecycle methods in a click handler or something, you can go ahead and you can call that imperative API.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to give you these components that are just going to do those things, you know, call those methods for you on mount, basically. And again, it just comes back to reading the render methods. And I think the render methods read quite nicely with that kind of stuff. But yeah, it really threw a lot of people. There were some people who were very passionately kind of like,
yeah,
that's wrong. So it's just like, well, we'll see how it goes.
It kind of sounds like it would be just from like the warnings that you see, like, don't do this in a render method.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go ahead and like dispatch something in a render method.
Mm-hmm.
That
it feels impure,
potentially
even
dangerous
it is
or impure.
Pure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be curious to, like, because I do like reading cleaner and cleaner
that's
renders.
I think the important distinction is that it is pure, because if you know you're providing the props that will tell it to mount that component, and so if you provide those same props, like if you're unit testing and if you provide that, you render that component, provide those same props, you're going to get the same exact result every
single
time. Mm-hmm.
Totally, exactly. So I get it. I get the kind of mind bending that's going on right now, and that, you know, it's mind bending to me too a little bit, which is why I think it's not the only API that we prescribe. But on the other side, it just does. It reads so nice. It reads really nicely. So anyway, we'll see how that all works out. I mean, if it turns out to be a bad idea, we could scrap it.
Yeah, right.
But I think the React Router 4 link is actually going to use something like push in its render method, so that people can see, oh yeah, like that's how it's used. That'll be good.
Are you guys using Redux or anything right now on your team?
We kind of just got started on Redux. Most of our apps on our teams are Redux, but I would say they're simple Redux implementations. We're kind of still exploring out what do we keep in the Redux store and what do we keep in component state, and then when is it painful to have made one call versus the other? So
how are you guys handling async side effects?
Most of the time, our actions are kind of just like the kind of the pattern that she described earlier in the talks today, the thunk one, where it's like, I'll dispatch this action when I start the Ajax, and then I'll dispatch this one when it gets back, or this one when it fails. So they're pretty simple in that regard, but
cool.
Pattern-wise, for our apps, it seems to work pretty well because a lot of the logic lives on the back ends. So we're just going to do that and then render the results.
Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool what Kate Hudson was talking about with the, by the way, I was like, wow, Kate Hudson's here, like Michael Jackson, like this is amazing.
Right?
What other celebrities are gonna pop up? She was talking about how, you know, in Firefox they had kind of the Redux state was living in a completely separate process. Did you guys catch that part of her talk?
Yeah.
Yep. I was like, that's something I'd never heard thought
that was
before,
a great,
right?
That was a
great like
talk.
Having you know, keeping that state out of your components lets you do things like IPC a lot more easily, right? Which is interesting. That's an interesting thought.
Have you guys played around with a lot with Redux? Or
yeah.
Are you guys teaching it?
We've done a ton with Redux. We've taught it. So we actually teach how to use Redux in our fundamentals workshop, and then we actually teach how to make Redux.
It's actually a pretty cool session.
In the advanced workshop.
Because it uses
Redux
is pretty
Redux
simple.
Just
from scratch.
From scratch.
Oh, just with vanilla JavaScript.
Yeah. So Redux it takes the store and it puts it on context, and then you know, whenever the store updates, you've got the connect method, which makes a higher order component. So we actually, you know, we talk about higher order components, we talk about context, and then it's like those are the two things that you need to know about in order to actually make Redux for yourself. And so then it just kind of peels away the curtains a little bit, and not so mysterious. But yeah, I've used Redux a ton. I think that Redux has actually shown us some really, really great things. You know, the time travel stuff, this idea of, I mean, just today, like the, you know, inter-process communication, sort of modeling your state outside of your components. I do hope that we can, in the future, find a way to do the same sorts of tricks, like the same sorts of really cool things that Redux can do now, in a way that is a little bit more integrated with React, in a way that's like a little bit more kind of like, okay, this is core React. Because right now we've essentially got these two different ways, right?
Yeah.
And it's like whenever we're talking about like, where do I put this state?
Yeah.
Do I shoot an action off? Do I call a method and put it in some component state? Like, I think it would be great if we kind of had, I don't know, just a little bit more. Like there's an issue right now on the GitHub repo that's been there forever, on the Facebook GitHub repo, that's like, how do we externalize the state tree? Because we've got this great mechanism for managing state, but it's like kind of encapsulated inside these components. So could we like externalize that so people could build a middleware API or a logger or something like that on top of it, you know? Yeah, so Redux.
Yeah.
We use it.
Have you seen any of the like efforts to do like component local reducers? So it's like Redux, like it's like having Redux for each component, not for not all the time, but for like times.
I haven't actually seen any work like that. No.
Yeah, there's a bunch of projects for like if you're doing like a form or something, you would have like, instead of having all of that state go to your normal stores reducer, you'd have just a component local reducer.
Oh,
you dispatch
okay.
actions that it only sees and doesn't bleed out until you want, you know, if you want to dispatch actions for the whole world, you can.
Yeah.
So it's kind of blending those two.
Is that
I don't use
who's
it.
Doing that?
I've seen like three or four different competing
okay.
examples.
That's usually where like we run into issues. If we have it in the Redux store, you know, anything firing off, any action, we have to like on these like complex grid renders or something like that, we have to start considering about like, oh well, now this whole UI is re-rendering because somebody's like toggling a search over here, and that's usually when we go, all right, let's keep that search visible in that state.
Yeah, you gotta be a little
more
careful on what you're connecting and how you're opting into to non-pure re-renders. Yeah.
Would be interesting to see, because, you know, we have some cases where the main app can live and have its own store, but then, like, you know, sidebar, flyout or something, like, I'd be curious to see about having a Redux store just for that application, or that, like, mini application.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any solutions that I was like in love with. It's an interesting space that a lot of people are experimenting with. which there's, I mean, there's MobX as well, which is like the opposite of Redux, but same goal, which is like, to me, when I first saw it, literally it was like, I was like, this is Ember's
best. Totally.
Like, this is like, this,
totally
is, this
is
Ember for
yeah,
React.
Like, it totally is.
So it was like,
set this property, the UI updates.
Yeah.
Yep.
And like, having computed properties, and you know, it's like.
Do they use Object Observe in MobX? No,
they use the same, basically, effectively the same mechanism that Ember does.
They have get and set methods?
No, but they do it, they use features that Ember just has not committed to because of lack of support.
Oh, okay.
You know, getters and setters.
Yeah, stuff like
older
that.
Older support,
okay.
You know, you don't have to use decorator
that makes
and all
sense.
That stuff. But they basically are using things that the on the Ember could totally do, but mm-hmm. just has not yet transitioned to do.
That makes sense.
Like Ember hasn't transitioned to using classes yet, like class-based syntax, which you can say one way or the other, but they're just taking the more safe route.
Yeah. They want stuff that works, and that's not.
Yeah, and particularly like on, there's been a, like in MobX, you don't have to, when you create a computer property, you don't have to define the dependencies of that computer property. You don't have to say, if I have a full name property, you don't have to say a first name and last name or dependencies. It can pick it up automatically. And there's been several, I mean, it's not, Ember could totally do it, but there's some foot guns that come to that when you start dealing with arrays and certain things that like, there's third party projects that do this. And I've experimented with myself back when I did Ember.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it ended up being like things would update that I didn't, because you're not explicitly saying for it to recompute. Because
you updated something over here.
Yeah, you just unknowingly are recomputing something, and it becomes a lot harder. It's kind of similar to the two-way binding thing. Like it's harder to reason because of magic.
Yeah.
And so it's tough. You know, like for the 95% case, it's all, you know, that's
great.
Awesome. You don't have to do any boilerplate.
Yeah.
And it's just magic.
There,
so
once in a while,
I'm on the fence about it. I mean, I've experimented with MobX, but I haven't written any apps full time using it yet. But.
Yeah, I think I really need to get back in and like just write a really large app. Not a really large app, but like an app, you know.
You could write a GUI for npm CDN or something, like a dashboard for that.
Yeah. So I actually recently took to like writing these tiny apps. Like I wrote this little like calculator thing just on a whim a couple weeks ago. I was like maybe I'll write a calculator in React. And like that's
you were re-implementing the iOS calculator.
Yeah. And I was like, that's non-trivial, right? Like I'm doing math. There are a couple of different functions on the calculator. Maybe that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And so I kind of did that whole thing, just with React State. But I don't know. Maybe I know the MobX guy, for example. I know he was working on I think it was a spreadsheet application.
Hmm.
Which, when I look at that kind of API, I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's very
that
well,
totally
it's reactive,
sense.
You know,
yeah.
And a spreadsheet.
I changed this
reactive.
Cell over here. I want like all the other values to update, right? Like because this one is the sum of all those cells and something like that. So yeah, I think it totally makes sense for what he was working on, and I told him that. I haven't ever really felt the need to go too far out of set state. Which is why I say maybe I just need to build bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I build big things, then maybe maybe it'd be like, oh yeah.
Multi-page wizards.
That's why people really love Redux. You know? Something like that. Anyway. All right. How long have we been going?
I think yours are good, but we have to end with a dance party.
A dance party? I feel like I've been dancing a little bit this whole time, like... Oh, Michael and Jay. Like,
let's talk a little bit more. Get
I had I just had this Mountain Dew, so I've got like.
No, I'm dancing now.
Oh, good. You're just. How about you dance when we throw money at you?
I don't know if the Pink Power Ranger suit is the kind of outfit that they're wearing.
Why do you have to do this? This is way better than putting it all on.
Oh, can you just do the? Okay.
Dance party, guys.
Are we supposed to stand and dance? I thought, I'm really terrible at dancing.
It's Morphin time!
Mighty Morphin!
Go, go, Power Rangers! My face just fell off.
I tried. Thank you guys for being on the Modern Web Podcast.
You're welcome.
Hey, no worries.
Where can we find
you
guys
say
on
goodbye?
The internet?
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
We're saying
internet.
Goodbye now. You can find me at on Twitter at _JPhelps, JAYPHELPS.
I'm also on Twitter. I'm not at SPR because that's taken. I'm not at SPRJR because that's also taken.
Boo.
Both totally inactive accounts.
Right.
No one has
mine too. That's why I'm
Twitter
underscore.
Username.
SPRJRX. It's terrible.
SPRJRX.
Yeah. Well, you had to add a letter at the end. So what letter would you add to J Phelps? Like
underscore. Probably. He added
an X. Underscore.
Cool. Yeah.
It could have been SPR.
That's why I'm underscore.
Oh, the X is cool, dude. It's like X. I like it. I'm M Jackson.
Verified?
No. No, you know what? Now that they've opened
verified
up...
Verified Michael Jackson.
Now that they've opened up...
Wouldn't that be confusing?
Oh,
I feel like you're never going to get verified simply because of
because,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that they opened up verification, I feel like
what
it's not
it?
As cool.
It's just
yeah.
showing your ID, kind of?
I mean, I saw freaking, like, you know, Sebastian McKenzie was verified. I mean, I was like, okay, great, Sebastian.
Kind of sound
you,
like
right?
one of those,
but, like
yeah.
I don't think
WoW
there is any...
Player.
I am the
like,
real creator
no.
of Babel,
right,
just
right.
in case you were wondering.
Yeah. I don't think, it, like, all the people I see getting verified now.
Yeah, who does
like,
verify?
I'm like, why would anyone mistake someone out? Like, there isn't, like, people making fake accounts for Yehuda.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's like,
how many Yehuda cats are
hey, look,
there?
If you guys want to be verified and they need some sources, I will verify you guys.
Yeah, you will.
Good.
Okay. Even though you're kind of, you know, you don't
no,
want,
I don't
you
think,
just want everybody to have the blue
check mark. I don't
think
mark. I'll
it's
ever
only
do it.
For
well, so
how we did it back
when,
in the,
when everybody has the blue check mark and I'm the only one who doesn't,
then you'll be
then
cool.
You'll be cool again.
Then I'll be cool.
Again.
Yeah.
You're
right now,
so
no.
Cool.
No,
so,
no.
No, you're not because you don't have the blue star.
Exactly.
But
so do you, I imagine you have a lot of Michael Bolton.
Office space.
Yeah, those type of interactions.
Every once in a while.
Someone's like,
every once in a while.
Michael Bolton?
Yeah. Like, he's the jerk.
Is that
not
your
me.
Real name?
Yeah.
Are you related to that singer guy?
Well, so, no relation, actually. No relation. Surprisingly, I know.
I know.
Surprisingly. So, a little story about my name, if we have time.
Absolutely.
My, I used to be kind of embarrassed about my name. Believe it
oh,
or not.
Really?
Believe it or not.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
When I was
see
in
it.
When I was in sixth grade, the news broke that, you know, Michael Jackson was having little kids over to his place and molesting them, and so I, in sixth grade, learned what the term molestation meant. You know, so with for a kid, that's kind of like, that's not what you want to be learning
that's
at
your,
that age.
Name, that's your namesake.
Yeah, exactly. So and there, I remember actually there was like the janitor at my school. He knew my name, and this is my elementary school. And I'd be like walking around, like on my way to lunch, and he'd be like, "Hey, Michael Jackson!" And I'd be like, "Oh man!" It's like I couldn't acknowledge him or anything. So it built up kind of this complex, you know. And it got to the point where, when I was a teenager, I would like have a really hard time like dealing with it, you know. And people would. And anyway, my father noticed me one day. I introduced myself to somebody and I said, "My name is Michael Jackson." And I kind of like paused between my first and last name. And after the interaction, my dad, he pulls me aside and he goes, "Are you ashamed of your name?" And I was like, I guess, yeah, because I... He's like, "Don't you ever be ashamed of your name." He goes, "That's your name. That's not anybody else's." I'm like, "Well, actually, it kind of is." but it kind of helped me. So I was like, okay. I was like, no, he's right. Like, this is my name. I got to deal with this, right? Like, I got to own it or else. Nah. So anyway, now whenever I introduce myself to somebody, I say, "Hi, I'm Michael Jackson."
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet. There's no denying when the CSS starts flying and it works on every client. Download Normalize.